guys, and welcome to episode 230 of the OCDstories.com podcast. Now, in this episode, I chat with Nora Charloway Carpenter, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. So in the episode, we talk about her OCD story, a trauma she experienced, going through OCD and pregnancy. So we go into detail of what it was like for her having OCD while she was pregnant. We talk about her book, The Edge of Anything, which I ended up reading after recording this episode. It's a fiction, and I think she did a very good job of capturing what OCD was like. So if you're into fiction, then maybe check it out. Link will be in the show notes to her book. But she talks about that in detail. She talks about the characters in the book, why she did it, and how she tried to be as accurate as possible. We talked about her therapy journey, medication, how her partner held her accountable with therapy homework, feeling understood in therapy, and how what she learned about anxiety through therapy helped her in parenting her children, words of hope, and much, much more. So thank you as always to you guys for listening and to Nora for sharing her story and talking about her book. And before we start, a thanks to our sponsor, NoCD. With NoCD, you can now receive live face-to-face video therapy sessions with an OCD therapist. NoCD's therapy services are only available in the US currently, but the free tools in their mobile app are accessible to all. If interested, you can give NoCD's care team a call and they can help by learning about what you are facing and offering information on if NoCD therapy is right for you. To find out more, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. On the podcast today, I have Nora Charloway Carpenter, who has kindly agreed to share her story with us. Welcome to the show, Nora.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
It's good to have you here. And so it'd be good to hear your OCD story in as little or as much detail as you want to give.
Okay, so my gosh, where should I begin? So I wasn't diagnosed until early adulthood, but I definitely now looking back know that I had, I would say mild OCD as a teenager, where when I would get really stressed out, especially like in late college, I would start, you know, I would just keep checking the doors, like that I'd lock them or checking to make the stove was off. And then I would be get like confused and I'd be like, no, it's not off. And I'd have to go back and check. So just like some little signs like that. And then, unfortunately, when I was in early adulthood, I, suffered a trauma that basically, my therapist explained to me, I guess kind of unlocked a really severe form of OCD, which can happen sometimes. But I didn't know what was happening. It wasn't like, I just started behaving in ways that I didn't understand. I started having thoughts I couldn't get rid of. I started being afraid of everything and needing to watch my hands compulsively and my arms compulsively and worrying that, I was also pregnant with my first child at the time. And there was, a fear, the fear was around that I was going to somehow hurt the baby. So everything, you know, like I couldn't eat, I had to eat everything like just right. And things had to be washed a certain amount. And like, because if I touched something and then touched something else and then ate something without washing my hands, you know, it would hurt the baby. So like, that was kind of my narrative. It just got really, I spiraled very quickly because I was also dealing with, again, so I'm undiagnosed at this point and, also dealing with undiagnosed PTSD and depression. And so I really thought I was losing my mind. You know, I mean, I didn't know what was happening to me. It was really scary. It was embarrassing. I felt I had a lot of shame around because there was part of my brain that knew like a year ago, I wasn't doing this, you know, I wasn't having these thoughts. I wasn't doing these things. And now I was so terrified sometimes to even get out of bed because of all the triggers that I was facing. And I just didn't know how I was going to go on. So, thankfully, I have a very supportive partner who recognized something was really not right. And, some supportive friends who were just like, you know, I kind of pulled away from everyone because I was embarrassed and I didn't want them to see me like this, you know? But they still were like, okay, something is not right. And I have a friend who has suffered from severe OCD since she was a child. And she kind of started noticing some things that I was doing that kind of, set her, was like, oh, I think there might be something going on here. And, but it really, I couldn't, even though people were telling me, oh, maybe you have OCD. I was like, no, I don't. I know what OCD is. I don't have OCD. That's not the same. 'Cause it wasn't, my stuff wasn't really the same as kind of what I thought OCD was, or, what I had heard about OCD from the media and things. And so I just didn't think I had that. And I also grew up in Appalachia, and there's that very cultural idea of, you have to be mentally strong all the time. Like, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Like, you have to, basically, I had a family member one time who told me, she was like, you just have to snap out of this now. Like, stop acting this way, Like, that's really stuck with me.
Bet.
And finally, it took my cousin, actually, who lived many states away, but he had also suffered with OCD his whole life. And I knew that, but I didn't know kind of the details. And I also, my OCD wasn't like his. Like, his involved a lot of counting and things. And so I didn't have that. And so it didn't really. I just didn't know that that's what it was. And so finally he was like, okay, I'm just going to look up some people for you. 'Cause I did kind of try to reach out to my primary care doctor, and nobody really like knew what to do with me, I guess. And so he was like, I'm going to find you someone. And so we found a therapist. It took a couple to kind of get one that actually knew. We actually ended up finding someone that specialized in, OCD in pregnant women who had OCD. So that was like, we were in DC at the time. Like, many places are not going to have that, I know, but that was, it was really life-saving for me and life-changing. And to finally get a diagnosis was the first step, but it was like nowhere near the end of the story. Just, I was introduced to CBT therapy, which I really, I just, or CBT, I guess, but like really changed my life. It was so hard. I mean, like, so hard. But I did that work, and I mean, it saved me, like, I finally getting on a track with people that believed what I was going through, that knew that it wasn't my fault. 'Cause I definitely had this sense of like, I there's something wrong with me. Like, somehow I've done this to myself. Like, why am I feeling this way? Why can't I just stop having these thoughts, which part of me knows are ridiculous, but another part of me is like, no, they're not ridiculous. These are like real thoughts and real fears, and you need to, keep yourself safe and your baby safe and your family safe. And so it was a really hard, gosh, I don't even know, more than a year, I would say, the for the really severe part of it, because there was. I didn't want to be on medicine at first because of the pregnancy, and there was a lot of stuff there that I grappled with, and we went to so many different doctors to kind of get reassured that no, I could take this, and serotonin, it was going to be okay, and it would really help me and help everything. And I'm so glad I did that now. And so I try to be really open, because I remember back then looking for things online and trying to find somebody or something that kind of, would explain what was happening. And it just wasn't, I just couldn't find anything, I'm so grateful that you have this podcast. I just think it's
Thank
so
you.
wonderful that people, like, yeah, it's such an awesome resource. So anyway, so I still work very hard. I'm happy to say that my OCD is very manageable now, and I'm in a much better place. And it did take me a long time to be able to, there was always that shame aspect of it, and so it did take me a little bit of time to be able to talk about it. But once I did start talking about it, it was like I met so many people that were like, oh yeah, like, I have that too, or this happened to me, or my really good friend went through that or something. And so I was like, you know what, like, I really needed someone to talk to, or so that would have really helped me when I was going through this severe thing. And so I want to be that person. I want to be talking about this. I don't want it to be a stigma anymore. Like, so many people are dealing with it. Mental health, things are through the roof right now. And so that became really important to me to just talk about it and try and normalize it just in my own circle. And then because I'm a writer, I did know that one day I wanted to write a story, not about what happened to me, but about using kind of the emotions. I wanted a character that was going to go through something similar, that would have this undiagnosed OCD thing that she, you know, that was like tearing her world apart. And I wanted to tell the story in a very authentic but hopeful way too, because I really could have used that when I was in those darkest days, you know? So yeah, that's how we ended up here. Took me a while, but I finally wrote it. I wrote it, and it's funny because it got, you know, it is my first young adult novel, or my first novel that got published. And it's interesting because I think it's not the first novel I've written, but it's the first one that sold. And I think part of that is because, like, you know, the energy there, like what I wanted to say, just came through really powerfully, I think. So, yeah.
No, thank you for sharing your story. And we're going to get onto the book in a bit, so I'll hold off from asking you any questions about it now, just because I want to focus on your story. Look, thank you for sharing that. And at what point did you get the treatment again? Because you said it kind of really kicked off around your first pregnancy of your first kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was when I was pregnant with my first son. It was really, really bad, and I got treatment halfway through that pregnancy.
Okay.
That really helped. I mean, really helped. Like it was, and I know that doesn't work for everyone and everyone's situations are different, but for me, like CBT really worked, having serotonin, figuring that out, getting my levels where they needed to be. It was kind of like night and day, you know, like I was still having obsessive thoughts and certainly compulsions and things, but I felt like myself again, you know, and that was just, that was everything. So now I really like to tell people too, like how much that helped me, you know, finding the right level of serotonin. And because people do, if they have, you know, a physical condition, they go to the doctor and get medicine. So it's just, it just makes sense, you know, if that's recommended in your treatment plan. So I wanted to destigmatize that too.
Yeah. Well, thank you for speaking to that and sharing it. Yeah. Because like you said, there is stigma.
For sure. Yeah.
And yeah. So I appreciate you opening up about it. So I'm going to focus mainly on the therapy though, just because that's kind of within my jurisdiction.
Sure.
I'm definitely not qualified to speak to medication. So my question was, because I have never really, I haven't spoken to anyone on the podcast before that was doing therapy at the time of being pregnant.
Okay.
and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, great. No one's shared that. So
how exciting.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, because you're doing, and maybe you can fill me in on the timings, but you're doing CBT when you're pregnant. You obviously then give birth to your child. Mm-hmm. Had you finished CBT at that point, or did you temporarily stop it?
Yeah. So I also moved to a different state during that time. Okay. So it was like there was a lot going on. So I did CBT the whole time. Cool. And the whole time the only thing that I stopped was, and not everybody does this, but in my particular situation, like with the medicine, I did wean off. I did wean off right before my pregnancy and then kind of wait and get back on. Like there was a specific reason that we did that, but that's different situation to situation. But when we moved from Washington, D.C. to Asheville, North Carolina. And I was really scared at first because, you know, I had a great therapist in D.C. and I knew my routine and everything. But I found another great therapist here and we just continued that work. And yeah, it was great. Like there's a lot of like actually CBT and OCD stuff here, which I kind of wasn't expecting, but there's even like people that teach it. So,
Cool.
so people that really just get it. I don't know. I feel really fortunate that I was able to find a place, in the new city where I moved. And yeah, I kept it up for a number of years after my first son. I'm trying to think. I don't remember if it was like 2 or 3 years, but I did, you know, and I would taper off. Like I was doing pretty intensive, like weekly sessions. And then I started to get better, you know, as
Yeah.
improvement. But it was, like I said, I feel like it was really life-saving for me,
Yeah.
for sure.
No, absolutely. And yeah, and I'm guessing, I think the reason why I'm asking these questions is for anyone who's in this particular situation listening to this currently, is so you kind of, I'm guessing you briefly stopped therapy while you gave birth, because A, well, you moved, right? And then I'm guessing you wouldn't have time to do therapy
Right.
when you've
Yeah.
got a brand new newborn. But yeah, at what point did you kind of pick it up again after?
You're talking about like going into the office, because like I did have like assignments that I was supposed
Okay,
to do
cool.
like all the time, and I
Yeah.
would do those even with my newborn at home,
Great.
you know. And
Yeah.
what really helped too was, I mean, my partner is just super on board. He was very super supportive and very much like making sure, and I would tell him, you know, okay, this is what I need to try and do. This is why it really scares me. And this is like the goal. Here's where I need to get. And so he was really supportive around, like, even when the baby was little, you know, and I'd be like, I was able to kind of vocalize to him, like, I don't want to touch that. And he was like, well, do you need to touch it? Like, is it for your therapy? And I was like, yes, I'm supposed to be able to. And he was like, okay, well then you need to do that, you know? And so having him there, I mean, he's certainly not a therapist or anything, but just having like a support person to just kind of like hold me accountable, I guess, you know, because it is easy to slip back if you stop doing, you know, you get like into that mindset again where you're just like, oh, I'm just not going to touch that. Well, now I'm not going to touch this. And now I'm not, you know, and now I'm going to wash my hands extra. And so he was really diligent about, you know, he'd be like, no, I think you need to touch that. And then you need to hold the baby. And I would be like, oh my God. But it was also like, it's his baby too. Right. And so he, and he's, you know, being like, no, this is what you need to do. And then, and I would do that. And it was like, it was hard, but also wonderful at the same time. Like I could almost feel like, okay, yeah, I needed to do that and I'm okay. And the baby's okay. And so even when I wasn't actually going into the office, I was always doing, like, I had to write down kind of, you know, the things that were bothering me, or if I didn't do something. And specifically during that time, it was probably about a month where I wasn't like, going into the office to do therapy. So I had to be really conscientious about, because my medicine was changing too. So just like really, they were really keeping like a close track on me, kind of like, what are my thoughts? Like making sure I didn't spiral into some like a depression or something like that. So yeah, I feel like it feels like I really didn't take that much of a break. Like even
That's
though I
great.
was, yeah, I just, I needed to, I just really, the, where I was at my, that point in my life, I needed to just constantly be doing the challenges, the therapy that was given to me, really every day, or else I'd kind of go backwards.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. I think that's useful. And, so when, because you said prior to kind of initially getting therapy, you felt kind of misunderstood, if that's fair to say.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah. And so when you kind of first sat in that therapy room, and it was with the OCD, the therapist that understood OCD, what was that kind of like, hearing them talk about your experience?
Well, so the therapist that I ended up sticking with, right? You're talking
Yeah,
about the one
yeah.
that like knew what she was doing. Okay.
Yeah.
I think there was an immense sense of relief. And also, I just remember feeling this, oh my God, I'm not alone. Like, I'm not a freak. Like, she would say, like, well, do you have that? Like, has this happened to you? And I would be like, yeah. And she'd be like, okay, yeah, I have a number of patients that have this. Or, you know, she'd be like, explain why she was asking me. And it would just be like, no big deal to her. Like, she would be like, oh yeah, that's consistent. Like, this is why. And this is probably why you're having this, you know, and I was just like, oh my gosh, yes. Like, this is, and so, and before I'd kind of felt like this anomaly, you know, like, and I think especially for women too, because I was pregnant and so many people, they're like, oh, it's the most joyful part time of your life, you know, like, aren't you just, isn't everything wonderful and you're just reveling in this? And part of me just felt like I died inside when people would say that, you know, because I was miserable. And I mean, I was so happy about the baby, but like this other thing that I was dealing with, this OCD, like that was awful. And having the two at the same time was really challenging to navigate. So I kind of felt like, oh, I'm not even doing pregnancy right. You know, like I'm supposed to be doing this. I'm supposed to be doing that. Like, and I just couldn't. I was just in a different space. And so having the therapist be, you know, basically be like, yeah, that's normal. Like for, you know, for someone who's pregnant that has OCD, like, yes, this is normal. And so this is what we're going to do. And this is where we're going to do it. And here's why, you know, you can expect it to be, you know, this level of hard. And just being able, like, I could just really tell she knew what she was talking about. Like she'd done it with other women and it had been successful and they had gotten through it, you know? And that was just such, oh my gosh, like the light. It's like someone had just offered me like this bouquet of hope, you know, like you're gonna be okay. Like, you know, and it's fine. You're not weird because you're dealing with this, you know, you're just a person that this OCD that it has OCD and this happens sometimes and this is how we get through it. And it was just so, oh my gosh, it was wonderful.
Yeah, no, thank you. Really, thank you for opening up about that. So, the therapy, the medication, was there anything else either then or now you find useful for just kind of staying on top of your mental well-being or health?
And it's interesting because my kids are pretty young. They're 2, 5, and 7. And I do worry about them sometimes because I'm like, oh, are they, you know, OCD is genetic. And it's interesting, like, will something show up when they're teenagers or young adults? And so we do talk a lot about strategies when they're feeling anxious and stuff too. And one thing that I had to do a lot, which was interesting for me as a writer, is I had to do writing exercises. I had to about like the fears that I had, and I had to have these thought experiments where I would like put myself in that place of fear and go through and kind of just feeling the terror and letting that come into my body, you know, and then watching as it went away because I wasn't actually in that place, you know, but just kind of letting it go through my body. And so I use that a lot still, just the idea of that it's okay to have those feelings, but also that they are cyclical and that, you know, if you find a way to kind of breathe and get through them. Like just the other night, like when my 7-year-old was worried about something, I don't remember what it was, but it was at bedtime and he was really worked up. And we talked about the idea that worry and fear often kind of like is like a wave, you know, it starts to come and then it gets really, really, you know, you're really, really afraid. And if you can just like, let's just breathe a little bit and just kind of feel what that feels like. Like he told me like what it felt like in his body. It was a little bit hard for him to do, you know, but I'd be like, well, does your stomach hurt? And he'd be like, yeah, my stomach really hurts. And I'd be like, okay. And so he kind of told me what that was like. And then we breathed for a little bit. And then a couple minutes later, he was like, oh, Mom, you were right. It's gone. Like it feel, you know, like it came. And I was like, yeah, isn't that interesting? Like, and so, that wave idea, that imagery for me just really resonates. And so I use that a lot, and it's in the book too. Like the character does
Oh, cool.
it in the book. because that really helped me. And when I was like going through panic attacks and things like that, and I still use it because it's so helpful to know, like, okay, like I feel like in this moment, like I'm never going to be okay again, but I know that that's not true. And I'm just going to breathe through it. And I'm going to wait for that wave to come back down.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing. I love the wave analogy for emotions. I was actually, one of my questions was going to be, and you just answered it, I was going to ask, has going through CBT and ERP, you know, helped you in the way you parent your kids when they get fearful at times? So.
Yeah, I would say yes, absolutely, for sure. And it's interesting parenting young children because I'm very conscious of, I don't want my worries. Like sometimes I do get a little bit obsessively worried about something and I want to be very careful that that's not coming across to them, you know, because I don't want to, we can be very stimulated, especially like empaths, which a couple of my kids are, you know, can be very stimulated by like the other, like your environment and how people are feeling around you. And I don't want to kind of give them that thought pattern. And so that's challenging for me, but also kind of my own therapy, you know, where I have to kind of go through things in my head. And then when they're upset about something, and, you know, for kids, even if it's something like, oh, somebody didn't play with them today. I mean, not right now because we're in isolation, but, you know, if somebody didn't play with them, or that's like a really big deal for them, you know, and even if we talk about how it's probably a misunderstanding or something, like the way they feel is valid. Like I do try and talk about emotions a lot and feeling those emotions, but then not letting our emotions control us. And that's very challenging for, you know, little children, but I kind of feel like if I just talk about it without harping on it, but just, you know, mention it as we're going through, then hopefully as they grow up and get older and they hear other messages, they'll kind of remember, and over time it'll just sink into them. I don't know. I mean, I try my best, but parenting is hard.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I think that's wonderful. Yeah, that's one of my biggest wishes, that the school system, definitely in my country, and I'm sure in most others, they install some kind of lessons early on around just educating around emotions, that they're kind of like, as you said, waves, and thoughts aren't facts, and simple things like that could I predict make a world of difference.
Oh, I agree. And it's interesting. So our elementary school here, they get 2 days of mindfulness with their a month. With their, well, not anymore again, because we're not in school during COVID, but, and they're so short on the counselors and staff that can do this. You know, when I was talking to one of them, I said, is there any way that you could do it like every week, you know? And they're like, we just don't have the staff for that. But I mean, it's really nice. So they are, I do feel like there are professional educators who are aware of the benefits of mindfulness and, you know, relaxation techniques, and also just mental health tools. But it's just like making that a priority in the school day, you know, and like having resources, the resources. Yes, exactly.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I agree. I mean, I wish if like some of these schools that you hear about, like private schools and stuff, that are like their kids are able to start their day like with a 10-minute meditation or something. I mean, oh my gosh, like how wonderful would that be?
Yeah, I agree. Was there a big epiphany for you in your recovery, or light bulb moment or anything like that, where something just clicked?
Or something just clicked. I don't know that I would say there was a big, there was like one moment. I feel like it was really a gradual process where I started to feel back to myself. I think the biggest moment for me, like hindsight's always 20/20, right? I was so worried during my whole pregnancy. And when I gave birth and my baby was healthy and, you know, he was great. And it was kind of like people told me, like, you're gonna worry too much. You're gonna hurt the baby because you're worrying so much. And it's like, wow, that's gonna make me worry less. You know, like now I have to worry about worrying too much. Like it was like trying to manage all that was really stressful. And then like, oh my gosh, I did it. Like I went through all of this horrible trauma and this nightmare of undiagnosed OCD, and my body still produced this healthy baby. And it that certainty, right? Like OCD is all about certainty. Like you can't be certain in things. And I remember telling my therapist, like, well, if I could just know for sure that my baby was going to be okay, then I would be okay. And she's like, well, of course, that's what everyone would say, you know, like, but we don't have that certainty. We don't know. And so I do know, because then I had two more kids, and I just wasn't a part of it is because I had done so much work in therapy. I don't want to make light of that at all, because I think therapy is so important and you have to do a lot of work, to if at least if you have the severity that I had. But I didn't feel the same amount of anxiousness in my pregnancies, my second and third pregnancies, because I knew that my body could do it, and I would do my therapy and take my medication. And it was going to be, you know, I had already had one healthy baby, and more likely than not, I was going to have more healthy babies. So that just really, that really helped. But in terms of just it, there was never any kind of like, oh, I just feel magically better one day. Like, no, that definitely not.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess the flip side of that though is, was there kind of a roadblock or several roadblocks you found in your sort of recovery journey? And if so, how did you overcome them?
Yes. So definitely. So when my first son was very young, I was not getting a lot of sleep. He wasn't a great sleeper. And my therapist explained that, you know, OCD is made worse by stress, and just like most mental health conditions are made worse by stress and lack of sleep. And I was like, okay, well, I can tell, because I feel like I'm getting, you know, like I'm my symptoms are coming out more. And so I did have to at one point up my therapy, like just how many times I was going. We had to play around with medications, because the one that worked for my before I was had given birth the first time, I ended up switching to a different one. And so I tell people too, like, don't just because one doesn't work, you know, you might want to try a different one, because we had to play around with that a little bit to get the right something that felt right. But yeah, mostly with the sleep thing, that was really tough, and I started to slip backwards again. And so going in and having not only CBT, but I feel like talking to my therapist, and just I think really having the validation that I was not, again, that I was not like this weirdo, you know, like for lack of a better way to say it, because I'd be like, oh, this is weird, I had this thought. And he was like, no, like you don't even know how many people have told me that, like this is not a big deal, like, you know, like just his demeanor of like, this is not a big deal. And I was like, really? It's like so weird. And he's like, oh, not really, like this is, you know, like this is why. And so that kind of reassurance just really, I guess the way that he normalized it was really, for me, really a big deal, and that helped me a lot. But yeah, just like constant exposure work at home. I mean, doing a lot of, you know, having like assignments and being like, well, I need you to do X, Y, and Z before next week. And I'd be like, well, I don't want to do X, Y, and Z. And he's like, well, if you want to get better, that's what you have to do. And I'd be like, ugh. But just having like that good rapport with a therapist where I felt really comfortable, and we could almost kind of like joke about it sometimes, you know, like get to that place. That was really helpful too.
Thank you for speaking to that. Okay, so your book, The Edge of Anything, which is the book you were talking about earlier. So yeah, I guess you did start describing it, but anything else you want to say about it and the character with OCD?
Oh yeah, sure. So I'll just kind of tell you, like, give the little brief description of it. So The Edge of Anything tells the dual narrative of Len, who is an outcast teen photographer who believes she's slowly losing her mind. And Len is the character I was telling you about. And Sage, who's a popular volleyball star, who has her own devastating secret. And the book is about their stories and the unexpected friendship that saves them both. So, yeah, it's really interesting. So it's dual point of view. So it, every other chapter, it's, you know, Len, then Sage, Len, then Sage. And they're both going through ordeals of their own. Len's is, you know, she ends up having undiagnosed OCD. And Sage kind of figures that out. Like, she's the one that, like, figures out something's wrong. And I really... the book at its heart is about, like, the power of human connection, the power of friendship, because both of the girls end up saving each other. And so you can kind of, what I want readers to think about at the end really is, like, would they, and I've already said it's a book about hope, so it does have a hopeful ending, but it's, I also want readers to think, like, well, would either of the girls be alive if it wasn't for the other one at the end, you know, and how can we help each other in our day-to-day lives, like in our interactions with other people? Because for me, it made such a difference in my life, the people, the friends that, like, paid attention, right? The friends that saw, like, something wasn't right with me, you know, and kind of, like, and helped me get through this severe OCD time in my life. And so it was really important for me to have an authentic character who suffers from a mental health condition, because I have read books where it's very clear that the author doesn't have whatever the mental health condition is, for one, and also hasn't, like, had people that have that condition read it, you know, because, like, you can do sensitivity reads, you can do a lot of research. It's one thing to read about something on the internet. It's quite another to have that condition, right? And be able to write about it from a knowledgeable perspective and create a character who's not just that condition. Like, sometimes I feel like characters are presented as, like, crazy or insane, or, like, they're just defined by the mental health condition that they have. And I really wanted to show that, like, no, Len is, like, a full rounded character who's going through this terrible time, but she has these other things going on in her life too. Like, she's trying to win this scholarship. Her photography is really important to her. She wants to have this friendship, but she's really introverted and it's really hard for her. And so there's all these other things. It's not just her OCD. So I wanted to present that. And then with the character of Sage, who she also has her whole story that she goes through. But one thing about Sage, and I think too, sometimes people don't expect it from athletes, because they're kind of stereotyped as well, but she really pays attention. And so she kind of sees what's, something is a little bit off. Like, Len is doing some things, but it looks like she doesn't really want to be doing those things. And she kind of, and, you know, and they start to have this friendship. And I, hopefully through her point of view, readers that haven't ever had any experience with mental health condition can kind of gain some empathy, right, for people, and be like, oh, well, I wonder if the person, this person in my life who suddenly started acting or withdrawn or a little, like, I wonder if they're going through something. You know, sometimes I think we're always thinking about ourselves. And so we might not see what's just under the surface of another person, where if it would maybe just, like, a couple kind words or just reaching out to someone might make all the difference to them. Right. Yeah. And so I just really wanted to have these two characters and really explore that, the idea of friendship and the human connection, and how that can be life changing.
Yeah, thank you for sharing it. I'm grateful to hear, you know, from Len, and so what's the other character's name again? I'm blanking.
Sage. That's okay.
Sage, Sage, Len and Sage.
Yeah.
For both of them, you've done it. There's much more to them than the mental illness or the stereotyping in terms of the sport for Sage. Thank you for that. I'll add a link to the show notes. Anyone wants to check it out, it is out now. And I'll definitely read it myself.
Thank you.
No worries. So, I guess for you personally, does writing help you in your mental health journey, whether that's like journaling or just the creative act of it?
Absolutely. So writing for me is the way I process the world. It's the way I write basically to figure out, I write about things that I don't understand or things that I don't really have any answers to. But things that are impacting me. And so that's why it has been really challenging during this time of COVID-19, because I am full-time parenting right now. My 2-year-old doesn't really, understand that I need some writing time. So I'm not writing nearly as much as I normally would be. But yeah, I do process the world through story. I mean, I think that's human nature. I mean, but I process it through creating story and through kind of taking these what if questions or like a really challenging situation, or I often will usually approach stories from a character first. And I think I always want my stories. I think this is true of like young adult fiction in general. Like, you always want to offer hope at the end, right? Because at least for me, when I read books, I mean, there's so much awfulness in the world, like in general. Like I could just like turn on the news if I wanted to like be immersed in that, Like if I'm gonna spend my time reading a book, like it's fine if there's like terrible things that happen, but at the end, like there has to be something to look forward to, Like I need to, that's what I feel like the strength of writing is, to kind of give people that hope and that, like, okay, it's worth going on another day. Like, we can, I'm only one person, but I can make some kind of difference in a small way. And so coming up with stories that I can tell and getting those characters through, like writing The Edge of Anything was very cathartic for me, because I put those characters in very difficult situations, and going through Len's journey emotionally, I had to really go back into some dark times in my own life to kind of remember what that was like, and like really like the kind of thoughts that she has, and what and feeling like she's losing her mind and what's going on. And and I would be like writing at a coffee shop and just like crying, because that was really hard to process. But I also knew that I was going to get her through it. And that act of getting her through, and hopefully the act of reading for the, with the reader, like going through that and then coming out on the other side with her, is very cathartic. And that's how I view writing and writing stories, is that I deal with some pretty tough situations, but I'm always helping my characters get through. And that's why I read too, to as a reader myself, to be pulled through tough situations and be like, yeah, like we can do this. I mean, we're in this like really unprecedented time with COVID-19, and so many people are having, are getting depressed and having like really powerful emotions, and we have to know that there is still hope, and that's why I feel like stories right now are especially important for that reason. So I definitely process through writing.
No, that was beautiful. Thank you for sharing. Words of hope for those with OCD.
Words of hope for those with OCD. Yes. I wish I had this show when I was going through everything. You're not alone, and there's nothing wrong with you. And, everybody has their stuff, right? And you have OCD, and that's okay. And you go through it day by day, and you do what you do to get through. And if you're in like a severe time where it's looking pretty bleak, I mean, I just want you to know, like, I was there. There were days where I just did not want to get out of bed, where I just didn't feel like, I didn't know how I was going to go on. And I got through, and I am, here. And things are so much brighter, and they will get brighter for you too.
Absolutely. Okay, so you can pick up the phone and call your 20-year-old self. What'd you tell her?
Oh my gosh. Oh, don't be so hard on yourself. Trust other people who want to help you and let them help you, and you're going to get through it. That's what I would say.
Nice. Good call. And then you've got a billboard near where you live. What do you want written on that billboard?
Oh, do I want written on the billboard? I want mental health matters.
Absolutely.
And what I really want is free therapy for everyone. That's what I want.
Put that on the second billboard.
Yes. Yeah. Free mental health therapy.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think we all need it. I do. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. Okay, so is there anything else that I haven't asked you that you wish you could have shared today?
I don't think so. No, we talked about a lot.
Cool. Well, look, thank you so much for sharing your experience in so much detail, talking about your book as well. I hope people that want to read go out and buy it and check it out.
Thank you.
No worries. So, yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. So there you have it. Thank you so much to Nora for sharing her story. And don't forget, today's episode is sponsored by NoCD. To find out more about NoCD and their therapy plans, head over to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. Until we speak, take care.